The time is 6 o'clock. This is Radio Ghana, the news presented by Lily Defo
and Baba Yakubu.
In the headlines, Northern Regional Security Council moves to restore normalcy after yesterday's disturbances at Lamashegu. Chief Executive Officer of Fair Wages and Salaries Commission, George Smith Graham, kicks against suspension of singles prime pay policy. Ghana Red Cross Society appeals for government support to reach out nationwide. Ugandan rights activists and politicians challenge anti-gay law in court. And Libya's prime minister sacked after North Korean oil tanker escapes from rebel-held port. First, a summary with Barbara Yakubu.
Following violent clashes at Lamashegu yesterday, the Northern Regional Security Council has instituted temporary measures to contain the chaotic situation there. The Agri Northern Regional Minister Bidzia Deng told Radio Ghana that the council will meet today to decide on permanent security measures to bring the situation under control. The Chief Executive Officer of the Fair Wages and Salaries Commission, George Smith Graham, says it will not be in the interest of workers, government and social partners to defer the implementation of a single prime pay policy. This is because suspension of the scheme is not a solution to the challenges facing the scheme. The Ghana Red Cross Society has appealed for financial assistance from government to enable it to expand its activities across the country. The appeal was made from a society led by its president, Dr. Michael Ajikum Adu, called on the president at Flagstaff House in Accra. Ugandan rights activists and politicians are challenging the anti-gay law, which was signed by President Yoweri Museveni into law last month in court. They say the law violates the rights of gay people and subjects them to cruel and inhuman punishment. Several cases of violence and retaliation have been reported since the signing of the law. And Prime Minister Ali Ziadeng of Libya has been dismissed by the country's parliament after a tanker laden with oil from a rebel-held port reportedly broke through a naval blockade. Meanwhile, Defense Minister Abdul Ali Tini has been named interim Prime Minister.
Radio Ghana, meeting the news challenge with credible information.
The news now in detail, and first we go to the northern region, where the Regional Security Council has put in place temporary measures to contain the chaotic situation in Tamale. This follows a crunch meeting to find a solution to the situation. The outgoing Northern Regional Minister Bidzia Deng told Radio Ghana's Georgia Secretary that the council will meet today to decide on permanent security measures to bring the situation under control. There have been violent clashes among some youth at Lamashegu, a suburb of Tamale, that resulted in the death of two persons and property with several millions of cedis destroyed.
The Regional Security Council meeting was not conclusive because we had many issues on the table to deal with, and the meeting will continue tomorrow. But we are taking some decisions, and one of the important decisions that we are taking is to put in place a joint military police patrol team, which will be patrolling the Tamale and the Tamale metropolis and then Nalerigu district to ensure that there is law and order in town.
Nalerigu coming to the picture, is it part of the Tamale metropolis?
In fact, the problem that we are talking about actually was imported from Sanlerugu. Sanlerugu is a district, an assembly area within the, which is adjoining to the Tamale metropolis. And so the first incident happened in Sanlerugu, and the victim was brought to the Tamale teaching hospital, and who subsequently died and triggered off the other problems which came up.
Did the issue of a possible curfew come out during the meeting?
No, that matter has not come up yet because there are many issues, but that issue has not been tabled yet. In any case, so far, we have been able to contain the situation.
How long do you intend allowing this joint military?
And so as it goes on, we keep reviewing the situation, and I believe that once there is some improvement in the atmosphere, then we can probably decide otherwise.
Has RESET in any way met with the people who properties were affected? I'm talking about Bayport and other institutions that were also affected, although they may not be directly involved in this incident.
No, we have visited the station which was burned, and we have seen the harm that has been caused and the damage that has been caused. So I would let one of the representatives of Bayport and then talk to him. These are matters we are yet to consider.
outgoing Northern Regional Minister Bid Zedeng.
Meanwhile, the Northern Regional Police Command has arrested three persons who were part of a mob that burnt down a radio station in Tamale. Speaking to Radio Ghana, the Public Relations Officer of the Northern Regional Police Command, ASP Ebenezer Tete, said the police, in partnership with the military, have been able to restore calm to Lamashegu and Abuabo, both in Tamale.
The tension that was in the Lamashegu area earlier on, we managed to bring the tension under control. We have restored law and order in the Lamashegu area, and the police are still on the ground. Earlier on, we had an information that tension was mounting at the area. The youth group in the area were charging on the premises of radio, that is a private radio station in Tamale. Apparently, somebody was alleged to have gone to the radio station, and during the panelist discussion, he was alleged to have said something which incensed the youth groups. You know, that one who was killed yesterday happened to come from the Lamashegu area, so they did not take kindly to what this person was alleged to have said. So they started charging on the radio station, and before we got there, we saw that they were burning cars on the road and throwing stones here and there. So we managed to get a reinforcement from both the military, and our reinforcement that came from Pingani also assisted a great deal. So based on that, we managed to arrest three people. But unfortunately, the youth who charged on the radio station were able to vandalize the offices of Bayport Financial Services, which is at the basement of the storage building housing the radio station. They also succeeded in burning some cars that were parked in the yard. About three cars were bent, and the windscreen of one contract bike was also vandalized, and a motorbike was also bent. The one who was alleged to have made those comments, we managed to whisk him away. So the three people we have arrested are also still in our custody.
And how safe is the situation for a resident to be able to go about their duties?
We would like to assure the residents of Tamale and other areas that we will continue to be on the ground, we'll continue to do everything to ensure that law and order prevails in the Tamale metropolis. What we are also telling the radio stations are that they should be very circumspect in their discussion.
ASP Ebenezer Tete is the PRO of the Northern Regional Police Command.
And away from Tamale, the Chief Executive Officer of the Fair Wages and Salaries Commission, George Smith Graham, says suspending the implementation of the single spine pay policy is not a panacea to the challenges facing the scheme. He told Radio Ghana's Agatha Samoa on Behind the News that it will not be in the interest of workers, government and the social partners to defer the implementation of the policy. It was the commission, together with their stakeholders, will rather discuss the best option of finding a solution to the challenges rather than its suspension or cancellation.
We can't do that at this stage. I think that at this stage we need to go ahead, and then it's not about deferring, but rather move a step further and implement the other aspect of the policy where we will link pay to productivity. We need to implement it. And where we think that we are going to incur huge costs in anything, we can sit down with organized labor and discuss. I don't think that deferring is a solution. Deferring brings mistrust. It will bring what you call attention. It will bring labor agitation. And I don't think that is what we are looking for. So that is why I think that we rather need to implement the policy, but slow down on whether it is increases or whatever. Slow it down a little, and then we can have discussions with organized labor where we need to moderate the increase and whatever. We can do that, and then we'll go ahead with the implementation of the policy.
Well, so you are in the driving seat as far as the implementation of the pay policy is concerned. Having come this far and briefly, what kind of discussions do you want to see taking place so that the new pay policy is not derailed?
The discussion I want to see happening, and those discussions are happening. If you go to, you come to the Public Services Joint Standing Negotiation Committee, you can see very serious discussion happening there. The wage bill is high. The ratio to the revenue is very high. How do we slow down? How do we make sure that we achieve the ECOWAS convention criteria of having 33 to 35% of your wage bill to your tax revenue?
Chief Executive Officer of the Fair Wages and Salaries Commission, George Smith Graham.
Meanwhile, the TUC says it will welcome any dialogue on how to manage the rail bill in the interest of both workers and the economy. The union says it is convinced that the problem is not the wage bill, but rather inefficiencies in its management. Secretary General of the TUC, Kofi Asamoah, told George Asikri that suspending portions of the pay policy could create more problems for organized labor.
I do not see how practicable it would be talking about suspending the single fine altogether. Because the basic question is that you suspend the implementation of a single fine and then replace it with what? Because we've all been engaged in discussing the challenges, the implementation challenges of the single fine. You may recall that we met in Hope last year and discussed extensively the future of the single fine. Yes, we acknowledge that there are implementation challenges, but we do not think that the solution lies in the suspension of it. I think strongly that what we need to do is to manage the challenges arising out of the implementation of the single fine. Indeed, if there are portions of it that needed to be looked at, if there are avenues and opportunities for consultation and negotiations with labor. But anybody who thinks about suspending the whole thing altogether perhaps may be bringing more problems than expected.
What appears certain is that the wage bill is very huge. About 70% of what we get goes into the payment of our salaries. Now, we are in the part of the year where organized labor normally would want to meet with government to see an upward adjustment of salary, coupled with the fact that those engaged in managing the economy are saying the economy is hard. So will it in any way affect how TUC is going to demand upward adjustment of salaries for workers?
Of course, we are told that there are economic challenges generally in the country, and that will definitely inform our consultations. It's important to let everybody know that under the principles of labor relations, there is no way you can worsen the condition of any worker. We have always held the view that it is the management of the wage bill which is problematic. It's the inefficient management of the wage bill. By the issue of the wage bill, if you may recall, labor has almost always questioned the basis of that assertion that it is 70%. We are still convinced that it is not that much. It's not that much.
Mr. Asamoah said organized labor will reject any move to suspend payment of already negotiated allowances due workers. He said organized labor will, however, take into consideration the current challenges facing the economy and its demand for upward adjustment of salaries for this year.
We think that the inefficient management of the wage bill is what is leading to either duplication or payment or ghost names or all those who are not required to be paid. And until we manage the wage bill efficiently, we can't draw that conclusion as has been done in the past.
Will TUC accept any proposal for government to stop whatever arrears due workers for the sake of the economy and then look ahead for whatever decision that will be taken?
I do not think that there are arrears. We negotiate terms of payment. It is not a matter of doing away with it completely. And indeed, we have negotiated terms of payment for the arrears already. So yes, labor is hoping for further discussions on how to efficiently manage the single fine salary structure and also efficiently manage the wage bill, because we keep on and we want to say that the way forward is to manage the wage bill and then the single fine implementation challenges. The way forward is not to talk about suspension of it.
You wanted government to pay arrears for the 10% last year before the year ended. Unfortunately, that was not done. So what is TUC doing? Are you giving government some ultimatum for the remaining months?
There has been a publication to the effect that terms of payment have already been negotiated.
Secretary General of TUC Kofi Asamoah in that interview with George Asikri. This news comes to you from Radio Ghana, Accra, and the major stories. Northern Regional Security Council moves to restore normalcy after yesterday's disturbances at Lamashagu. Chief Executive Officer of Fair Wages and Salaries Commission, George Smith Graham, kicks against suspension of single spine pay policy. Ghana Red Cross Society appeals for government support to reach nationwide. Ugandan rights activists and politicians challenge anti-gay law in court. And Libya's prime minister sacked after North Korea oil tanker escapes from rebel-held port.
Radio Ghana, number one current affairs news channel and more.
Welcome back. The Ghana Red Cross Society is calling for financial assistance from government to enable it to expand its activities across the country. The Red Cross Society, led by its president, Dr. Michael Ejekum Ado, called on the president at the Flagstaff House in Accra. The Act of Parliament that establishes the Ghana Red Cross makes the president the chief patron of the society. Government is also expected to allocate budgetary support to the society. The call on President Mahama was to ask for financiers to embark on a number of humanitarian services across the country as funds from his headquarters in Geneva, Switzerland has dwindled. The Ghana Red Cross Society has over the years been involved in relief services, maternal health promotions, blood donation, HIV and AIDS campaign, and first aid education. Dr. Michael Ejikum Ado tabled some concerns before the president.
For now, we have over 50,000 volunteers all over the country, and our target is 500,000 volunteers. After meeting you, we believe all the schools will come on board and will form a whole corps, the mass group of volunteers, and will train them on first aid. So with this revival of volunteering spirit for humanity, we believe we would also teach them entrepreneurial skills, and some of these unemployment can also be reduced. We also wish to support the vulnerable, children, women, aged, disabled, and orphans. When we see our core activities, which I've already enumerated, like the first aid post, the ambulance that we have, and some of the houses that we have built, we believe that it goes forward with the budget. And because it's an auxiliary part of government, we wish that it will be taken over. If for now, 40 staff spread all over the region for the past 3 months, we have not been able to pay them. So we wish that our sector ministry can take over our salaries.
President Mahama said the Ghana Red Cross is very critical in national development. He said government is committed to cushioning the society to live up to its core mandate.
The Red Cross is well known, you know, all over the world, and the objectives and humanitarian nature of the work you do is quite obvious. Certainly, with the work you do, we can't expect that you are a revenue-generating institution, and so, I mean, whatever support you can get, I think it's important that that support is given. Unfortunately, because of the budgetary constraints, the whole of the sectors have been going through, probably there's been a squeeze, not only on you, but on everybody else in terms of the resources you receive to be able to do your work. But I wish to assure that, I mean, with some of the steps you're taking, I mean, the resources in the budget are going to continue to grow and make it possible for us to be able to finance properly, you know, the various institutions that require those resources to be able to do their work. And so I'll encourage you not to be discouraged.
And that was President Mahama. Meanwhile, the Ministry of Health will soon start medical outreach programs with the assistance of Red Cross volunteers.
China says she's ready to support Ghana with technological expertise in efforts to treat polluted water bodies and reclaim Kalamsey lands. Outgoing Chinese Ambassador Zhang Jianzong gave the assurance in response to a request to that effect by President John Mahama when he called to bid him farewell. President Mahama said there's a need to bridge the current trade imbalance between China and Ghana. He urged China to consider investing in the country's mining sector. Also at Flagstaff House to bid farewell to the president were the British High Commissioner Peter Jones and the UNDP country representative Ruby Sandurujon, a report by Pascaline Adadevo.
All the three envoys have had at least 3 years duty tour in Ghana and tasted the proverbial Ghanaian hospitality. They all described their stay as very eventful. China was one of the first countries to establish diplomatic relations with Ghana. The new office complex of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, Ministry of Defense and the Bui Dam are but a few of the results of collaborative efforts with China. The Chinese are also currently in charge of the construction of the Cape Coast Stadium and the Kotokoraba Market. In his State of the Nation address, President Mahama hinted of transforming the economy with focus on the country's non-traditional commodities. Currently, trade between Ghana and China stands at $5.4 billion. President Mahama told the outgoing Chinese Ambassador Gong Jianzong to encourage his government to look at other areas in which to invest in Ghana. He also solicited Chinese assistance in solving to a large extent the damage done to vast land and water bodies destroyed by illegal mining.
We've had discussions with you and we've had discussions with various Chinese officials to see how we can turn the events of the illegal, small-scale illegal mining into a positive development. development between our two countries, and we both expressed an interest to engage to see how we can reclaim some of the mined out lands and clean, using Chinese technology, clean the poisoned water and restore the lands that were destroyed back to a good state so that we can continue to have a good environment.
British High Commissioner Peter Jones, 3 years ago, presented his credentials to the late President Professor John Evans Atta Mills at the Castle Usu. Mr. Jones said the United Kingdom is ready to assist Ghana in whichever way possible to solve her current economic challenges.
You know, I hope, Mr. President, that the challenges you face, you know, we want to help you address, you know, whether that's from the business side or through what UK investors are doing here. We believe in Ghana. We want Ghana to succeed.
The United Nations Development Programme UNDP country representative Ruby Sanjurojun had a private farewell moment with the president. The three outgoing envoys were presented with kente and a stool. Pascaline Adadebo reporting.
And away from the presidency, Deputy Minister of Trade and Industry Nili Lanti Vanderpoy says government has recognized the need to rebuild and modernize markets throughout the country. As a result, it has decided to adopt the public-private partnership approach to get the private sector to invest some of its financial, human and technical resources in the development of public infrastructure and services. Speaking at a forum on model markets, the deputy minister said such an approach will free government resources for other equally important sectors. Shina Sechiema and Sylvia Jepesu have more.
Deputy Minister of Trade and Industry Nili Lanti Vanderpoy said about 70% of Ghana's economic activities are conducted by indigenous businesses. Large markets should therefore be built to meet future population growth.
The issue of markets has become a very sensitive issue for governments and particularly for MMDA. This is as a result of the fact that economic activities of our people have been within the markets, especially in our contract setting. The markets have become the convergence point for even communication and transfer of information. And as such, markets are very, very important for our economy.
A capacity building specialist at the Ministry of Finance, Mike Ewua, said though the provision of markets is a primary responsibility of government, if the internally generated funds of an assembly is not enough to do it, government can then enter into a long-term financing agreement with private entities to build them, while government finds creative means such as charging of tolls to pay back the money.
That was a report filed by Shina Sechiema and Sylvia Japasu.
One of the challenges the United Nations faces is maintaining peace and security in Africa and other parts of the world. Some strings attached to its mandate sometimes put serious limits on the UN, thus hampering smooth operation in conflict areas. The former Undersecretary, UN Secretary General of the United Nations, Staffan Domingo de Mistura, made a comment at the second Kofi Annan Dag Hamsjan Annual Lecture and Award Ceremony at the Kofi Annan International Peacekeeping and Training Center in Accra. He called on the continent to, as a matter of possible, prevent conflicts. This will not only ensure rapid development, but also gain investor confidence. Here's a report by Antoinette Abba.
The Kofi Annan Dag Hamsjan Annual Lectures was instituted last year to celebrate the two men for their roles in maintaining world peace. Dag Hamsjan was the second Secretary General from 1953 to 1961. He died in 1961 in a plane crash. Kofi Annan, on the other hand, is the seventh Secretary General. He is celebrated for promoting Global Compact campaign and the establishment of the Global AIDS and Help Fund. The two are the only Secretary Generals of the UN to have received the Nobel Peace Prize. Speaking on the topic, the UN Peace and Security in Africa, Perspectives and Challenges, Mr. Mistura, who is also the Italian government special envoy to India, said the challenge of the world over the years is how to maintain a long-standing peace. He said the situation in the Central African Republic must be taken seriously.
In Africa, we have, as you know, several peacekeeping operations, and each of them has its own different component. And then you have the current SIC partner, which is Central African Republic, where I'm afraid if we don't get involved quickly, we may one day, even, God forbid, start remembering what happened.
happened in Rwanda.
Mr. Mistura asked African nations to join forces to tackle emerging conflict, as they are more effective and reliable than the Western measures, which often come too late. The director of the Legon Center for International Affairs and Diplomacy, Professor Henrietta Mensah-Bonsu, urged African nations to act swiftly to maintain peace, no matter how dire the situation is.
Africa should be up and doing. We should not only go and make resolutions to protect our bad leaders from accountability. We should step up to the plate and do more.
The Speaker of Parliament, Edward Dua Jaho, said peace is relevant to the advancement of development on the continent. Leadership must therefore find lasting ways to curb conflict and endless cycles of insecurity.
The less we fall prey to the alluring trap of addressing the symptoms rather than the core issues, I will argue that the way out of this endless cycle of insecurity on the African continent is simply a function of leadership at all levels. More importantly, sound political leadership.
38 individuals, institutions and countries were given plaques for their roles in promoting the growth of the Kofi Annan International Peacekeeping Training Center.
That was Antoinette Abbas' report.
And now to some international news. Ugandan rights activists and politicians have filed a legal challenge to overturn a tough anti-gay law condemned by Western donors. They said the law violated the rights of gay people and subjected them to cruel and inhuman punishment. Several cases of violence and retaliation have been reported since President Yoweri Museveni signed the law last month. Uganda is a deeply conservative society where many people oppose gay rights. However, some people are beginning to question whether punishments proposed in the law, that is life imprisonment, as the penalty for acts of aggravated homosexuality, is not too harsh.
Libya's parliament has dismissed Prime Minister Ali Zeidan after a tanker laden with oil from a rebel-held port reportedly broke through a naval blockade. MPs called a vote of no confidence in Mr. Zeidan after they were told the North Korean flagship had escaped to sea. Defense Minister Abdallah Al-Thani has been named interim prime minister. Earlier, Libyan officials had said they had complete control of the tanker as it tried to leave the port of Sidra, but the rebels rejected the assertion. Separatist militants have occupied three major eastern ports since August.
Malaysia's Air Force chief has denied remarks attributed to him that the missing Malaysian Airlines plane was tracked by military radar to the Strait of Malacca, far from its planned route. Rozani Daoud says such reports in local media were untrue, but it is possible the plane had turned back. The flights from Kuala Lumpur to Beijing went missing last Saturday after taking off with 239 people on board. Meanwhile, Vietnam says it is scaling back some of its search activities pending information from Malaysia.
And the funeral of a teenage boy who died 9 months after being injured during an anti-government protest is to take place in the Turkish capital, Istanbul. Berkin Elvan's death yesterday has led to protests in cities across the country. President Abdullah Gül has appealed for calm ahead of his funeral. Berkin was injured in June while walking to buy bread in Istanbul. He was hit on the head by a tear gas canister at the height of the unrest. Reports say his 269 days in a coma gripped the country and became a symbol of the heavy-handed tactics used by police to rein in the biggest demonstrations against Prime Minister Recep Tayyip Erdogan.
Now to end the news, the main points again. Following violent clashes at Lamishegu yesterday, the Northern Regional Security Council has instituted temporary measures to contain the chaotic situation there. The outgoing Regional Minister Bede Ziedeng told Radio Ghana that the council will meet today to decide on permanent security measures to bring the situation under control. The Chief Executive Officer of the Fair Wages and Salaries Commission, George Smith Graham, says it will not be in the interest of workers, government and social partners to defer the implementation of the single spine pay policy. The Ghana Red Cross Society has appealed for financial assistance from government to enable it to expand its activities across the country. The appeal was made when the society, led by its president, Dr. Michael Ejekumado, called on the president at Flagstaff House in Accra. Ugandan rights activists and politicians are challenging the anti-gay law, which was signed by President Yoweri Museveni into law last month in court. They say the law violates the rights of gay people and subjects them to cruel and inhuman punishment. And Prime Minister Ali Zidane of Libya has been dismissed by the country's parliament after a tanker laden with oil from a rebel-held port reportedly broke through a naval blockade. The news was presented by Lily Defo
and Baba Yakubu in Accra.